Greetings and salutations. This is the Fact Daddy Experience podcast, brought to you in part by my peeps at DVR Podcast. And I'm going to discuss the Japanese anime film Your Name. But before I do so, I just wanted to share some of my mental masturbation thoughts for the week, because they've been haunting me very minutely for the week. So here we go. We are afraid of being alive. We are afraid of love. We are afraid of ourselves, our thoughts, and of the world and everything in it. We cannot control life, we cannot control our thoughts, we cannot control the weather or other people or how they feel. And while there are billions of us, somehow we get extraordinarily uncomfortable with each other because we do not see the world the same way and do not express our existences the same way. Even though there are billions of us, which means there are billions of ways and billions of perceptions occurring. You can put a single object in front of all of us, and if we were free, we would see something different. Most of us still see something different, but we as a species live in such a way that we try to condition each other to see the world through the same filter instead of our own peculiar and unique filter. I find that fucking weird. Also, when people talk about freedom, is freedom about controlling every single circumstance and thing around you so you never have to experience pain and suffering? Or is freedom really about being free from controls, including allowing pain and suffering to dominate who you really are? A thought that led from that was, is, you know, life about ownership? Is it about owning things? Or is it really about sharing? Because regardless of how you see the world, the experience of being alive is a shared experience. You don't experience yourself in any way, shape, or form unless it's relative to every other existing thing. You're only tall because someone else is short. You're only one color because someone else is another. Outside of that relativity, what constitutes your existence, really? Who knows? Who's to say? I wonder about that, and I think one of the top fears in the human species is forgiveness. I think we're horrified of the notion of forgiving someone and not taking them to task for their failed existence. I'm not saying that you should live an existence without judgment, because I sure as fuck don't. But I guess what I'm getting at is, if someone does something horrible, what level of existence, what level of depth would you have to be at to actually find it within yourself to let go of your hatred and sense of justice and judgment to forgive them? There have been instances where people have lost family members to awful individuals and have forgiven them, and were never called upon to answer how were you even capable of doing that. Oftentimes they said that the hatred that they were holding on to was destroying them, and they realized it had no impact on the perpetrator whatsoever, and that oftentimes demonstrating forgiveness and love not only impacted them for the positive, but impacted the individual who destroyed that certain aspect of their life. I'm not on some We Are the World shit. I'm just saying, occasionally it's good to call into question even your own value system, beliefs, or perspective. Because ultimately, while we're here, why not try to evolve a little? Just a fucking concept, just an idea. After all, why do we live in a world where change is invariably greeted negatively, yet ultimately, at each and every moment of each and every day, ceaselessly, change is occurring? Whether you're accepting of it or not, whether you embrace it or not, it's happening. So, is it really that big of a fucking deal for an individual or a world or a civilization or a state to change? I don't fucking know. Anyway, Your Name is an awesome movie. Came out on DVD yesterday. I saw it in the theater. Great movie. Setting is in Japan, in two locations specifically. One is Itomori and another is Tokyo. The main characters are Mitsuha, which she's from Itomori, and Taki, he's from Tokyo. It's an interesting film because on the one hand it incorporates the classic body switch film scenario, which, you know, us in the States we're heavily familiar with it, whether it's like, you know, Judge Reinhold and Fred Savage switching bodies, or Ryan Reynolds and Jason Bateman switching bodies, or even George Burns and some guy, I don't remember his name, switching bodies. There's a lot of different types of body switch scenarios. There was even one, I think it was Bob Hoskins and Denzel Washington, which was it's a little weird, but you had a variety of body switch films. But this one incorporates a dynamic which is a little dearer to me in terms of overlapping time elements, multiverse elements, things of that nature, things that I gravitate towards in Rick and Morty and Donnie Darko. I also gravitate towards in Your Name. And particularly, it seems that Your Name incorporates the notions within the Everett multiverse idea. And basically, it roughly says that each event is a branch point in the universe, and it incorporates Schrodinger's cat theorem, except that it states the cat is alive in one branch of the universe and dead in a different branch of the universe, and these two branches will never interact. And that plays heavily into the film Your Name, in that it establishes all the eccentricities of the film. They all fall into that paradigm. So the approach is very interesting because they're not immediately feeding you the story. You see the character wake up, Mitsuha. She's a girl, a teenage girl, and when she wakes up and she looks down at her breasts, she's like, I have breasts. And this isn't the traditional stereotypical budding of puberty, youth development, looking at breasts. It's, I'm a guy, why do I have breasts? Because it turns out Taki is in Mitsuha's body. So it's very interesting, and there's a lot of tiny elements going on that are indicating different things within the story. For example, so Mitsuha is part of a family that holds rites in celebration of Musubi. They do a traditional cord winding ritual that's very complicated and been handed down for centuries. And they also do a unique individual of making sake, integrating human saliva as part of making of the sake, and delivering it as a form of tribute to Musubi. And there's a place where they place the tributes to Musubi. And the way that Mitsuo's grandmother explains it is that Musubi is God's art. It's the flow of time itself and how the chords of time connect everything to everything else, and how time can be connected and severed and reconnected and unraveled and re-raveled and such, so that it intimates a kind of disjointed aspect of time, meaning a non-linear facet to time. And the film deals with non-linear facets because, spoiler alerts, it basically goes into a presentation of time in a seemingly linear fashion, and then ultimately completely goes in another direction where you're realizing that there is a huge gap, or there isn't a flow to the actual time as it's being presented to you through the story, that the two main characters are experiencing overlapping time, meaning at one point you think they're coexisting simultaneously at the same time, and yet through that disjointed facet of time you're realizing that they are not. I don't want to give away why they are not, but suffice it to say they're definitely not. So when that aspect of the story comes into play and they switch out of the Mitsuo Taki body switch dynamic and they go into just Taki's experience of what the hell was going on, and Taki decides to research it and look into it and find out about it, he becomes passionately obsessed with trying to connect or understand what's going on with Mitsuo. And what he finds out is pretty devastating for him. So he goes back to Itomori, and there's a facet to the story where there's a forgetfulness aspect to it, where due to the disjointedness of time, both Mitsuo and Taki have moments where they forget who the other is, and they only have a sense of who that other was relative to their emotional connection. So he goes into the shrine with the sake, and he drinks the sake that Mitsuo made. And when he goes into the shrine, the grandmother describes it at some point as almost the underworld. So it's almost like he's going across the river Styx, and then he enters another realm, and then you have the overlap of space-time again. And somehow his journey reawakens his connection to Mitsuo, and he realizes the connection. There's a red ribbon that Mitsuo always wears at some point in time, relative to how time is represented. They exchange the thread, and the exchanging of the thread kind of establishes that connection that they have, both as living being and as beings who have experienced a unique oneness. Oftentimes, sex has been expressed as, you know, human beings experiencing temporary oneness, but to actually be in someone else's body and experience their life through that body establishes a unique connection with the other individual, and they definitely have one. And at one point in time, after he goes to the underworld and drinks the sake. He gets to see Mitsuo for a very brief time, where they know each other's names, and it's called the Twilight or Katawari Doki. And within the Katawari Doki, which is Twilight, where neither night nor day is prevalent, it's the in-between space. And within the in-between space, they reconnect. But that only lasts very briefly. And then it goes into a far more chaotic mode where both Taki and Mitsuo have to undergo tremendous hardship to grow as human beings and to try to reconnect. And I think it's probably one of the most beautiful love stories ever. And just the way that they utilize the Everett multiverse to establish the time travel multiversal elements of the story are incredibly fascinating, because it's so well done. You experience the characters in unique ways, their everyday lives, and how their personalities, when the switch occurs, impacts everyone around them. And it's very fascinating to see. And it's also fascinating to see how deeply we could love someone just within the framework of a story, because I think that's what stories really do for us. They act as a mirror. You can put any story in front of any person, and depending on who they are, their receptivity to the story and what they get out of the story is totally relative to who they perceive themselves to be or who they may aspire to be. I personally thought it was an amazing and beautiful love story, because the elements within the story, they build upon each other in a very strong way. Nothing seems forced. It's very fluid. And it's the totality of the story and the smaller elements coming together to bring you an extraordinary tale. That's what makes it amazing, because the pacing isn't initially very fast. It's not very off-kilter, but it very quickly immerses you into that world, and you root for the characters, and you give a shit about the characters. And just the fact that the story in and of itself is so fascinating in terms of how it integrates that Everett multiverse notion into the way the characters maneuver through space-time makes it really cool to me. I think it's great. So, I don't want to give away a ton more than I already did, but suffice it to say that when the comet Tiamat rolls over Itomori and the aspect of it, or part of it, splits, things get interesting. People cross the threshold of the underworld, and they touch the cords that connect space-time itself via God's art. I don't know. I think that's pretty hot. I think that's pretty cool. I've also been watching this show called White Funny. It's kind of funny. I mean, they had a cuckold joke in the show recently, in case you don't know what cuckolding is. Sorry. It's basically like someone who gets off on watching someone else have sex with their partner. And in this instance, it's usually a reference to males who enjoy watching their female counterparts fornicate with someone else. So there's a cuckold joke in there, and that reminded me of a joke from a Rick and Morty episode where there's they're in that citadel, and it's the whole citadel episode of Rick and Morty where, spoiler alert, the Morty wins the election against the Ricks. And it's where the three school children, Mortys, go. And they're standing over what ends up being a garbage dump thing, but they thought it was a portal to like joy. And the one guy was like, he made a reference to something about incest or family pornography. And I don't know. Rick and Morty tends to get away with making a lot of references to things that are so messed up. And I don't go online to look at people talking about it, so maybe a ton of people notice it, but it's just funny. So the show is kind of funny. I don't think it's great. I think it's entertaining. And sometimes art that makes people uncomfortable can be useful. So far I've liked it, relatively speaking, as far as TV goes. Obviously, for me, I prefer Stranger Things or Game of Thrones or Rick and Morty. And I used to enjoy Dexter, but I feel like that show jumped the shark. That's neither here nor there. But White Funny's kind of funny. And Your Name is a great movie. Hopefully, some of you will get to watch it. I loved it. It's one of my favorite movies. I think it's content rich, and that level of content speaks more to me as a person than something like White Funny. But there's definitely an aspect of me that can appreciate that type of humor. I like television like that, and modern television definitely pushes the envelope in a lot of ways. It's a lot more in your face. I'd like to see more facets of characters with greater depth, but we could take what we can get for now. And that's pretty much all I have to say this time around. Again, I'd like to thank every single human being who spends any of their existence listening to me mutter words and sounds and actually derives anything from it. I thank you and appreciate you. And also, just fucking enjoy your life. Love what you got, appreciate what you can, and do your thing. Peace. Yay, yay.